everyone, and welcome to another episode of Joyous Journeys Over 60. I'm Jane Grohl Ray. My podcast partner, Andreas Stein, is with us today, but he's off camera, so he's going to be the voice from beyond. We're also joined today by a guest, very excited to be joined by Lynn Henderson, who's going to share a little bit of her retirement journey, and then we're going to talk about what life is before, after, and during this important transition of your life. So stay tuned for this journey. It's going to be pretty exciting. As always, we invite you to join our Facebook group, our new Facebook group, Joyous Journeys Over 60. Tell you a little bit more about that after the end of the episode. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jane.
Tell us a little bit about your story, how you kind of transitioned into retirement, so pre-retirement, and then we'll talk a little bit about what your retirement journey's been like.
Sure. Well, I really hit pretty much the mark of a planned retirement in terms of the timing and all. At the time, I was working in Alaska, in Anchorage, Alaska. And my husband, Bob, was down in the Fort Myers area. And it really needed to be that I was down here full time. And COVID came through, actually. I was one of the part of the Great Exodus, I would say. It was all serendipical about that time for me. And so I was able to retire very smoothly and come down and be with my husband full time down here. And I thought, boy, The first few months of retirement, and also I'm part of a community. So we already had that all, I should say that. We were already had our home down here. We'd already renovated it when I was working. My husband was not working for the last few years for a variety of reasons, for health reasons. And so we had the home, we had the community. I belong to a club down here. And so all of that was kind of set. So you can think that you kind of have your whole retirement life of now you can do what you want to do. You have your kind of your social structure sort of built up in the whole thing. So, I mean, the first few months was, let's go. It's like spring break, it's like party city in Florida and spring break and everything. But I remember, though, still had an anxious side because I kept thinking I needed to get done with the round of golf because I had to go jump on a conference call. I mean, it was this innate feeling that just kept happening over and over again, where it's like, wait a minute, I got to get home because I've got to get that assignment done, or I've got to jump on a call, or I got to be in a meeting. And it really took for that meeting feeling to go away. It really took probably about, I'm going to say probably a year for maybe a little more for that feeling that I'm supposed to be somewhere else. I'm feeling bad because I'm out here playing golf, or I'm doing some other social event, and I need to get back so that I can, get to what's going on. So there was this constant kind of tug working in the background. And then you have all this time to do what you want to do. Oh, and I should make this footnote about myself and golf. So I say I'm a golfer. I don't say I'm a good golfer. I'm an okay golfer. I can golf with anyone kind of a person. Okay. And I golf. I like to golf. I'm an avid golfer. I would say that. So I always thought in the last 10 years that I worked, I lived in Anchorage, Alaska. So I did not get a lot of golfing done at that point in time because of obvious reasons that you all could figure out. Although we do have nice golf in a few months in the summer. But at the end of the day, I thought, oh, now I can put all my concentration, all my time into my skill of playing golf. Well, it turns out that's kind of scary because, I didn't get any better. I would be playing golf before and it would be like, well, I can't really concentrate because I got to get this meeting, or I've got to get this whole thing done, or, this has to happen. And now there's no excuses as to why my golf game wasn't like dramatically improving. So you know, there's that little glitch to the whole, oh, let's go golf. And really, you're not that good, Lynn. Turns out it wasn't all that other stuff. It really wasn't. So then, you know, you start to get involved. It just kind of happens where you start to get involved with your environs. And in my case, it was get involved with our club and get into board positions and that type of thing. I was asked to, and so I did. And so you start to build up this whole routine of kind of what you came out of. You know, you're working with people to you have, you know, mission and assignments and things that you want to accomplish. I should say it that way, which can be, you know, you kind of fall back into the same old mental routine. I'll say it that way. And then when all of that's happening, you're free to do all this other social life. And then you just do not feel fulfilled. So I went through this journey of thinking it was going to be great, which it is. And I don't want to be working. I completely think that when I got out, I'll call it, it was completely perfect timing, you know, because it just for a variety of reasons. And I would think that I would be elated every day and, you know, but it's just kind of like, I got to go do that again. I'm going to play golf on Tuesday. And I did take up bowling, though, which I never was a bowler, which a good friend of mine got me into bowling. And actually, I really like bowling, turns out. And bowling's a whole nother world out there. You don't even know what happens with all these great people that are bowlers. So that was really fun. But it's still in all is what you find yourself saying, or I did, is this all there is? You know, literally been saying that, is this all there is? And it turns out that's all there is. If you kind of pivot a little bit into the faith part of things, you know, there really was something that I was being led to that was probably bigger than what I experienced feeling was bigger than it was filling a hole of that was there. So. But those are kind of the linear path that I've taken.
It's not necessarily a straight path. Like when you say it, you know, it's a linear, right?
I would say that. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
It's not really a straight path. You know, you described it like kind of this up and down. It's a bit of a roller coaster, right?
Yeah.
You're right. You kind of plan for retirement. My retirement came because my company got sold. So it was not as planned. I didn't know when that was going to happen. Now my husband had a date. I mean, he had a date. He knew the date.
Yeah.
10 years before he actually retired, he knew this is the date. It's the day I'm eligible for Social Security. this is my date. But he also worked in a corporate job, and you had a pretty high level corporate job, right?
Yeah.
And so I think when you're used to that kind of a routine of a work life, that kind of responsibility, I had the same thing, that transitioning into something that supposedly is going to be more calm and more even. That's what they tell us, right? It's going to be more calm and you're going to get to do everything you want to do and all of that. I think there's a mental transition that is an emotional transition that covers so many different aspects of who we are. You know, identity crises, we know that, lifestyle crises, success crises. You know, Andreas, before we started recording, you said, well, how do you define a successful retirement?
Let me ask you that. Now, both of you were tremendously successful in the corporate world, different fields, different areas, but successful. Are you successful in retirement?
Well, I will answer it this way, that I think that I am achieving a level of happiness, but it isn't on the path that I thought how I would achieve it, if I can say it that way.
Where did you think you would find that happiness in retirement that you were looking for?
Well, like I said, I probably thought that I would play golf and do all these things and become, and travel and do all these other kinds of things that people do, and rightly so, during, if they can, in retirement. But which I can't say that I don't. I do a lot of different things, but that's not really the emotional fulfillment that I've been able to get. It really isn't. So
where are you finding that fulfillment?
Well, I'm actually finding it right now through my faith. And I will say that before recently, I was finding it through doing things that I really wanted to do in terms of getting into things like reading a lot of things, different things that I never had time to do, sit down and read. And it turns out I could be a pretty good student if I like what I'm doing, and I'm really enjoying that piece of it, which is something that, I guess I didn't really anticipate that. I mean, I think, and I've given myself a couple, they might be kind of offbeat things, that I went down rabbit holes in, but I'm kind of a whim kind of person a little bit. And my family would say that about me, but, I think it starts with being able to do what you want to do, basically. Now, I've also gotten involved with some things that I'm happy to get involved with, but I don't know that I really, turns out, enjoy it as much, things outside of my own sphere of what I want to do. And I'm sitting to myself going, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this consternation that I really don't want to do? And I'm finding that that's tugging at me right now a little bit in a different direction. But generally, I can say I'm happy. I'm not an unhappy person. And I could never complain about my life. That wouldn't be fair.
But, it's interesting because I'm with you on that I can genuinely say I'm happy in retirement now. But it did take at least a year. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think for anyone listening, if you're in the pre-retirement stage, particularly, or in the early retirement stage, I think there's kind of we've been talking about myth busting, right? That this myth is that you're going to retire and every day's vacation, yes. Right? Every day's a holiday. You're not going to travel every day and you might play golf every day. But after a while, that becomes a routine. Mm-hmm. And so it's no longer the kind of delight that you were hoping for because it does become just every day.
Yeah.
And so I do think there's a kind of reality versus an expectation of life when you have all the time in the world to do everything you want to do. And then your expectation is, wow, this is going to be so, and I'm going to use your word, so linear, like I'm going to just be happy every single day. And I'm going to be living, la vida loca every single day. And there were days that that are great. We did an episode last season, some days rock, some days reek. And there are days that you're just kind of questioning yourself, like, okay, what am I doing now? Or in my case, and maybe you can relate to this, it's that need to be constantly busy, right? Like, and I'm like that. But I mean, I'm admittedly a little type A. But it is like, okay, so on Monday I play pickleball, on Tuesday I do this, on Wednesday I do this, on Thursday I do this. It isn't necessarily setting up a routine. It is, creating something that I'm like always feeling like I'm doing something that is maybe I'm thinking is going to be fulfilling. Mm-hmm. And so, there's a little bit of that sneaks in. Before we started recording, we started talking a little bit about the generational gap within retirement, which I kind of want to dive a little bit mm-hmm. deeper into because I think that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. We talk about retirees. You could be retired at 58. You could be retired at 85, right? And still fall into that whole, I'm a retiree. And for argument's sake, let's say 65 to 85. That's at least two generations in there, right? Mm-hmm. So, those of us that are in the earlier stages of our retirement, we grew up in a different era.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Those that are in the later stages of retirement, they grew up in a very different era as well. Do you see that, you know, within that retirement community, like you talked about being on the HOA or, you know, other things, there is a little bit of a different approach, right? Maybe a different perspective of expectation or of life.
Well, I think they're totally, because we're coming in on the end what they've already been through. And in a lot of cases, they built what you're coming into.
It's true.
Literally.
It's true.
And if not literally, figuratively, because they were the first, they were really what lifted a particular environment, we'll say. So now you have people coming in, like myself, perhaps, to say, well, you know, this is really good, but why do you do that? And how about we change this whole thing? And so really, there's a group of doers, because we're still doers. We can't not be doers. That probably is not going to go away. And we want to say, you know, this whole thing is, and many times it's just structures are old, or, you know, the environs are old, or, you know, business practices within an organization are old and outdated. And you're bringing younger people in to work in these positions and the whole thing. And the way that you used to hire people, you know, maybe 50, 60 years ago, isn't the same, whatever it is. It's just different. And we're clashing a bit. So we're all the same. You know, just because someone's been here for 40 years and I've only been here for 20 years doesn't mean the person that we're all we're all doing the same thing. And so we're all equal in terms of our, you know, what we're here, whatever kind of membership it might be. So we have to learn how to exist with each other. And then we have to learn how to figure out how to pull the change that we need. I mean, I always thought of myself as a change agent. You know, I don't think people that know me would disagree with that too much. And, you know, always, you know, I'm going to change things and or recommend changes. And sometimes that is, it's kind of a little bit different than it used to be because of this generational thing.
Yeah, I think people that have been retired for a long time have already figured out something that maybe we're still figuring out, which is what their environment, what their lifestyle, what their personal gratification is. And so they've kind of settled into it, whatever that is, right? I mean, I play tennis with women in their 80s that, let me tell you, they can hit a ball.
Oh, sure.
Right? I mean, they're a much better tennis player than I am. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are others that are, you know, that I met a woman and her favorite hobby is puzzles. Not crossword puzzles. What am I thinking of? The puzzle pieces. God, I lost the word
Well, just like a regular puzzle?
Yeah, just a regular puzzle on a table. And sure. So she'll sit there for hours putting together a puzzle, and she's perfectly happy. Or there's a group within our community that play canaster, and they play canaster 3 or 4 times a week. And heaven forbid you miss a canaster thing. But a lot of the folks in those groups have been doing that for a while. They've kind of established themselves in retirement. And I think those of us that are newer to retirement, you said you were retired about 5 years, and that's still pretty new. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. I've been retired 2.5 years. We're still kind of testing, right? Mm-hmm. To figure out, like you said, some things work for you, some things don't work for you. And even practicing the word no, which, you know, that's a hard one, right? yeah, I never say no to Andreas, right? But okay, he's putting the thumb up on the
screen. He's sitting on camera, right?
Yeah. But you know, but even practicing the no to whatever, your family, your kids, your friends, your whatever, You know, before retirement, the word no doesn't really exist a lot because you're being pulled in a lot of different directions. And, you know, part of you is just saying yes, either yes, because you want to move up the career ladder, yes, for your family. And I think when you have all that time, you do also have the ability to say a little no. Have you said no?
Not very often.
We should practice.
No. I mean, and honestly, where I'm laughing a little bit because I haven't said no a lot over here. But honestly, at the end of the day, I haven't said no a lot anywhere. I've recently only started saying to some of my friends, I'm not going to do that. I would have to go to every kind of trip that was involved, you know, because we still have FOMO, you know, I mean, that's still going on. And I don't know if they still use that term.
Oh, they do. A fear of missing out. Yeah, I have FOMO.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I didn't want to be left out of things because, you know, you've got your social life planned out. And now I am starting to say no. You know, I don't feel like going there for that event, or I don't, you know, I've been there, done that like the last 5 years. How much difference is it going to be? I mean, but this could also be me, my personality, where I like to keep the ball rolling. Let's go. What else is out there? Kind of a thing.
Let me ask you one more question. So do you think that, as Andreas would say, successful career woman has a harder time retiring or an easier time retiring than a formerly successful man? Do you think there's a gender difference?
Yeah, probably. Well, for one thing, we probably stay healthier longer.
Hopefully.
There's that. Maybe not would.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a difference because they inherently, have the, now what I'm trying to say is they inherently have a place that's already carved out through society that may fit them. And women were coming in that we might have had that place back over there, but now we're rolling into this and maybe it's not as easy to break some of the barriers that we used to break more easily over, like, let's say in corporate life type of thing.
Let me expand on that a little bit. So growing up in the 60s and 70s is really kind of the first generation where women really were in the workplace and moved up in the corporate ladder. And so maybe we are the first generation of women.
Yeah, could be.
Who are moving from successful corporate careers into retirement. And again, men have been retiring, gold watches and all of that, you know, for hundreds of years. And so maybe you're right. Maybe they're, you know, their transition from being a worker into a retiree, and most still, again, retain their importance and retain their personalities and all of that. But for women, I mean, for the last 40 years, we've been trying to figure it out, right? Trying to do the balance between being a career person and a parent or a spouse. We've been, you know, kind of breaking the ceilings. We've been, and maybe that's part of this here, yeah, is that we're really that first generation of women from the workplace that are going into retirement. I don't know if it's more difficult for us or more emotional for us or more confusing maybe for us. Maybe it's not. I mean, maybe it's not, but it's an interesting, you know, something to explore. Maybe, Andreas, we should explore that even a little bit further in future episodes. Like, is there a gender difference when it comes to retirement you know, makes it easier or more difficult? I don't know. Maybe it makes it more difficult for men. Like, I don't have that perspective.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting thing to really think about, because even within your own relationship, you know, you're now part of a, well, like for myself, you're part of a a couple, whereas in your work life, you might, you know, ones might be over here and doing their thing and you're over here. Yeah, I see you're a couple, but you're not together all the time in the settings, so that you don't have to, kind of maneuver together as a couple. It's kind of different. It could be different because you're used to one way of interacting with people, and now you have your spouse with you, and maybe it's different. Maybe it's not. Maybe that adds to the equation too, your whole personal relationship with your significant other, a spouse, to the person you're going through retirement with. Let's say it that way.
So I apologize if my question sounds really ignorant. So in the corporate world, what success means is given to you. I mean, improve sales, improve revenue, do whatever. It's clearly defined and you really have little say in it. This is what success means. So hit it or not.
Right.
Now in retirement, you define success for yourself. Do you think a woman defines success differently than a man?
It's an interesting question. I don't know. I do think that some of the insecurities and some of the confidence that you experienced while you were establishing your career still creep in. I can't speak from a male perspective, whether that creeps in or doesn't. I can speak from, you know, my personal relationship. My husband's very confident about, you know, everything, whereas I'm like, oh, I lost that tennis match. I must be a bad player, you know, right? But the insecurity, you know, there are definite insecurities that kind of creep in, even socially, you know, meeting new people, making new friends, things like that, because when you were working, it was almost organic.
Why wasn't I invited to that?
Yeah, right. Why wasn't I invited to
How about that?
Yeah.
That's another one, right?
But, you know, when you were working, you know, particularly when you were at a certain level, you always got invited to things.
Yeah.
Or your meeting friends was very organic because you were kind of, you know, in
well,
the
people
same
people had to like you. Maybe.
Right. They had to like you if you were their boss, right? Or at least they would kiss up to you, you know, right?
That's why this is happening.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to like me.
Exactly. But it is very organic, right? It is very, you know, there's oversight. We talked about before about, you know, HR was there. So there were certain controls in place. There were, you're right. There were certain things that they had to like you because they were stuck with you. You know, even friends, you were thrown together in a corporate environment, even when you worked remotely, that I wouldn't say forced friendships, but certainly encouraged relationships. And now you're kind of out there on your own, even with a partner, right? Even with a partner, you know, my husband and I have different activities. He's a golfer, right? So he golfs 3 days a week, and he has his golf friends and his, you know, his routines, and I play tennis. And so so thankfully we both have different interests, so it kind of keeps us apart but also keeps us together. I don't know. I don't know if there is a gender difference there, but I do think that at least some of the, I would say, insecurities and confidence, like, because it's both sides of the equation. Like, some things I can go into very confidently because I know that, you know, I just know who I am. And some things I can go into very insecure because it's new or I'm not confident yet in my ability to do fill in whatever blank. I don't know if you felt some of that.
Oh, sure. I could say yes. You know, I mean, in some cases, I'm very confident walking into any kind of room, but then there are cases where, you know, it's a little different dynamic. You know, it's made up of, you know, people that are, you know, not thinking the same way. I mean, they're just here doing something else. And it's like, oh, now I got to break in. You don't know how to really, what do you have in common with these people? Are you going to break the ice? You know? So even that is, you know, it's tricky. Even though we've been out there doing it for a long time, it's all tricky. And
so, but this is so fascinating. Now, both of you, you know, having met you a couple of years ago, half a year ago, both of you come across as very secure, confident, successful. Hearing you talk about insecurity is almost, wow, really? How can somebody who is so has been so successful struggle with insecurity?
Well, you wear your title a little bit. I mean, would you think that's true? You wear, and when you're working, you know, your corporate success comes with a certain level of real or perceived confidence, right?
Now,
that doesn't mean
it's taken away, and now you need to find your security somewhere else.
I'll give you an example. It just happened actually this past weekend. So we went to an event at our club, and so there were people I knew, and I saw, you know, as we were walking along, hi, big hug, right? But we ended up sitting, it was my mistake, we ended up sitting at a table that it was just my husband and I, and then another couple came and joined us, a couple we didn't know. But nobody else came and joined our table the whole time. And I got to tell you, I felt kind of lonely. Like I was watching people I knew because they all have established friends and, you know, they have established networks and whatever. And these are people I know because I play tennis with them, but we're not yet at that, like, social friend thing. And if we had gone up to one of the tables that had two empty seats and said, hey, could we sit here? Absolutely, people would have said, sure. But we didn't, and I didn't. I sat at an empty table figuring other people would just kind of join us. And at the end of the day, and I got to tell you, it was a little bit of a lonely feeling, like, wow, we're in a big crowd. And I'm an extrovert most of the time. I could be a little introverted. Seriously, I can be a little introverted. And a situation is like that, where you're like, do I barge in on somebody else's group? Or do we sit here and wait for all the other stragglers to join us? And I don't have an answer to that. I mean, that's how the evening went. And I thought about it afterwards and said, well, next time we'll. But I went to an event, I think I told you this, a couple of years ago, where I didn't know anybody. And somebody said, well, go sit at that table. My friend is there. And the friend asked me to move, because her other friend was coming. So after that, I felt like I was back in high school, and I was like, I'm not going to that anymore.
Well, you know what, though? That is a big thing that Jane just said. I mean, it isn't too far-fetched that you aren't, because you're in Click City now. And the other thing is, if we're parachuting in and trying to make acquaintances or build relationships, you know, try to make a relationship, people already have their friends, and a lot of times they're not interested right off the bat of adding new to their group. So you kind of, you know, it happens. So you just kind of have to look out, and you might have to look around for people that are not, you normally wouldn't think you have anything in common with. And then maybe those people become very good friends with those people. But that's another equation of this whole retirement thing, actually. It isn't such that we're all going to go to this nice place that we're all at. And then unless we might know one couple, or maybe somebody, you know, was there, we're like, oh, we're going to go down and be with so-and-so. And that's good. But at the same time, now we got to carve a whole new thing out without the titles hanging over us, without the position, without bringing the knowledge every day, you know, who wants to talk about health insurance every day? I don't know. But maybe now this time this season. You know? But, you know, so then you've got to recreate yourself a lot, too. So
you have to recreate
yourself. Yeah, you do. I think you do. Yeah.
Well, that is powerful. So retirement, it means you have to recreate yourself.
A little bit, I think. Yeah.
Well,
that is fascinating. So you knew who you were. So when you were invited to a business retreat, to a business meeting, and even if there were people in that room you did not necessarily know beforehand, you were that secure, confident, you know where you're coming from. Now you're being invited at a clubhouse, at a social function, you don't know the people, and it's insecure. How do I go about? Should I sit there? Should I sit there? Do they want me at the table? Do they want to?
Well, they asked me to move.
That is a really great example. Been there.
Yeah, I left in tears, and I don't cry easily, but I did. I left in tears because it was like, they don't want me.
Well, who wants to feel like they're not wanted?
And again, it takes you back to high school. to your point, and we do have to finish because we could talk about this forever, but in a corporate environment, if you walked into a meeting or a retreat or something and you didn't know somebody, you would walk up and say, "Hi, I'm Jane, blah, blah, blah." And they might ask me, I might tell them what my role was. I might not tell them what my role is, but I would walk in all blustery, like, "Hi, I'm Jane Ray, you know, head of whatever." Because you're at that point wearing your role. In a corporate, in a social environment, it's a little different because it's like, "Hi."
Wearing your role. So what do you wear?
Well, that's a whole nother question for a different. Yeah, that's a whole different conversation for a different time in terms of picking out an outfit to wear. I feel very blessed because I think where we belong, people are not pretentious. People are very nice. Yeah. People are very open. And you're right. They have their groups. And it's not that they're not open to adding other people to their groups, but not by default, not like, "Oh, she's there, so come on in." I don't know what you would call it. There is an openness to new friends, but not necessarily an open door, right? There has to be a stronger relationship to be part of that group. So you start off, I mean, it is a process, right? You start off by, "Hi, how are you?" Or you start off that you're involved in the same activity, like you're bowling, right? You start off in the same activity and you get to know people, or you ask them, like, you know, "How's your spouse feeling? How's your kids? How's your dog?" Right. And, you know, you start to get to know each other. And I think it's just a transitional process to go from that to, "Hey, let's have dinner," or "Let's go to this event together," or "Let's, you know, do whatever." But when you're younger, I think younger, like in school, that happens much more quickly. I think when you're older, it's just a slower process.
But the challenges are almost the same, right? Like when you graduated high school and you moved on to college, your old friends are no more. Your old relationships, they're all pretty much unknown people, and you have to find a way to fit in, find your place, carve your niche out, make new relationships. So in essence, it's a similar transition, a similar challenge. Now, graduating from corporate world into retirement, it's almost like moving on from high school to college, all new.
Not exactly the same, because like I said about work, is it's organic. Yeah. So when you go to work, you are thrown in with a group of people, some of whom you'll like a lot, some of whom you won't like at all, and some of whom will become your friends, true friends. Friends you'll carry chapter to chapter to chapter, right? But it is organic. When you go to college, particularly if you live away at college, it's organic, right? You're thrown together with people, some of whom you'll like, some of whom you won't like, and some of whom will become friends, at least for that chapter or maybe throughout your whole life. When you're in retirement, even in a club, you are thrown together, but they've already, in many cases, kind of established a little bit. So there is, the analogy is there, but it is less organic. Anyhow, we have to end. We can talk forever about this, and I would invite you to come back.
I would love to.
And talk to us a little bit more about this. And Andreas, the voice off camera, the question.
The voice that haunts you.
Anyhow, I hope if you're listening, a couple of conclusions that I felt from this conversation, Lynn, and thank you so much. It isn't necessarily a straight line, and it isn't necessarily something that you go in with confidence or a plan. And even your plan may have expectations that are not reality. And we're all traveling these journeys on our own. They're all individual journeys, but they are a journey, right? The journey has not ended with retirement. We did an episode recently about the myth of first you retire, then you die, right? So there's something in between. Hopefully there's a lot in between. The two. So wherever you are on your journey, I hope that by listening to us talk about our journey, that there's something that you can relate to. And I also hope that you'll go out to Facebook and join our Facebook group, because that gives us a chance to interact with each other, to share thoughts, to make this less of a passive relationship and more of an active relationship. Anyhow, I'd like to thank Lynn Henderson and Andrea Stein. And of course, I'm Jane Ray, and this has been another episode of Joyous Journeys Over 60. Thanks.